8:05 on a rockin' Wednesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Top down, hair whipping in the wind. Sun's out, guns out this weekend. Shades are on. Maybe a little zinc oxide on the nose. Could be like a scene out of Top Gun Maverick, which you saw yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
One, did you go by yourself?
Oh, yeah. It was the old times. I went to Fifth Avenue for a 12:40 matinee. I had popcorn for lunch.
How many people were in the theater?
Eight. It was awesome.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
There was one good, guy. Man. There was one guy that bothered me because he kept squeaking his chair. But other than that, nothing.
It's pretty good, man.
Nothing.
It's pretty good. I am going on Saturday. I made reservations at a restaurant next to the theater. Get this. You know what the restaurant is? It's a White Spot Research and Development Kitchen. They opened it up at Brentwood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Fancy. La-ti-da.
The sneak peeks.
It's like elevated White Spot.
Whenever I see these movies or watch shows about people in the military that do these courageous things, and obviously Top Gun's a little exaggerated, but
what?
But you know, a lot of it takes place in San Diego, and I was in San Diego a few months ago, so you can see the jets constantly going over on their training runs, and I always think, like, what a wimpy life I've lived. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just so scared to do everything. Do you know how terrifying that would be?
Yeah.
And I think it just goes to show, like, how, I don't know, like, they're obviously adrenaline junkies, a lot of them.
Yes.
But, like, they handle the adrenaline so much better.
Yeah.
If a lot of us have an adrenaline rush, like, we fall to pieces.
Yeah. I mean, we get triggered by nasty comments texted into our radio show.
Yeah.
These guys don't get triggered by imminent death.
I loved some of the scenes. Like, I'm not even spoiling it because you knew this was going to happen.
What Top
like
Gun's about.
At the end of Top Gun, there was a lot of like bro hugs and a lot of like looks at each other. It's like, I didn't know about you before. I don't know if I trusted you, but man, you got my respect now.
You could be my wingman anytime.
My family has a lot of pilots on one side, and
really,
yeah,
you should have brought this up earlier.
Well, it's just funny because I am the furthest
way fascinated in the goalie stuff. Tell me more.
Well, there's just on my dad's
like
side,
fighter jet.
A couple
pilots?
Of them are Army, and then
wow.
Yeah, there's one guy that was actually the personal pilot for who's the Virgin Airlines guy?
Branson.
He was the ones that did the out of atmosphere flights.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually one of those pilots.
This is really fascinating.
So what are their
pilots in my family?
Okay, so what are their personalities like?
I don't know them that well. It's an extended part of my family.
There's like, you're too lame for them? Like, I'm not going to waste time with this. He seems to be really obsessed about, like, goaltending or
is
something Greg like that.
Is Greg still doing the sports thing?
I wouldn't say they're closely related, but they're...
That's pretty cool.
Part of my family is, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm the furthest thing from that, so it's very interesting.
I always find the stories about, like, the RAF pilots in World War II fascinating because those guys went into that job knowing that most of them wouldn't be coming back from those runs. Like, the technology back then was, they were like, you're probably going to run out of gas. Probably. Right. And it's just, it's the courage and the, and I know I'm not trying to make it was like, it's Top Gun, right? It's
a real movie. It's based on real life events.
Oh, I don't think it is actually that. And by the way,
dude out there named Mr. Top Gun. It's all about him.
It was also brilliant, the Top Gun, how they never identified the country that they went to invade.
That's just smart screenwriting.
Yeah. I was like, this could be a few countries, actually.
Yeah.
This could be, I'm not going to rank them right now. One of them might have been slated to play Canada at BC Place, just a bit of a hint.
But you know what? We'll never
know. But you know what? We'll never know.
Right. As long as you don't say the actual word out loud. Nobody can pin anything on you, and you'll never know. And that's how you remain uncontroversial. That's how you don't get canceled.
Do you ever
everything really vague?
Do you ever look at the lives that people have lived and be like, I am a real wimp?
I don't need to look at other people's lives for that. I don't need a comparison.
I'm just a big scaredy cat.
Okay. We are in hour three of the program. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. PlayNow.com, your local BC sportsbook. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow.com, your local BC sportsbook. I already know what wager I'm going with tonight. I'm not doing the money line. I don't really even care who wins or loses. But Nathan MacKinnon has gone without a goal through the first three games of the Stanley Cup Finals. That ends tonight. Right now at playnowsports.com, anytime goal scorer, you can get Nathan MacKinnon at 2.330. Those are the decimal odds, by the way. If you throw down $20 on Nathan MacKinnon, to score a goal in a hockey game tonight, you can win $46. I like to think of it in those terms. How can I win money? Can I suggest that by placing money on Nathan MacKinnon to score a goal in a hockey game, mm-hmm. I can win money? That seems simple to me.
He'd be a fighter pilot. Nathan MacKinnon, yeah.
He likes to go fast.
Mm-hmm.
He's an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
He's got a very strict diet. I don't know how that plays into everything.
I don't know if that factors into
Okay, so I think we took care of all the business here. It's time for our What We Learns. Who wants to begin? I know, Laddie, you've got, I think you have like a couple maybe in the chamber. Braff, I'm assuming you have one. I've got a few I can get into. Who wants to start?
I'll just do one.
Laddie starts.
Laddie begins.
It's a base question. You can rip on me whenever you want.
Okay.
Shohei Ohtani, as you guys know, is a pretty good ball player, MVP last year.
Yeah.
Kind of the running joke is that he's doing all of these things, breaking all of these records, but the Angels are still terrible. No different this year with the losing streak and firing Joe Maddon. And yesterday kind of put it all in perspective again. He had 8 runs driven in,
mm-hmm.
and they lost. That's only the 5th time that's happened in Major League history. The last time it happened was, it's actually a BC native, Jason Bay for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah, oh, trail wow, native really? Jason Law. Bay. I haven't
2003
thought about
was the last time it occurred. But Ohtani's was extra special. He's the only player out of the 5 where his team did not lead at any point in the game.
You know who the Angels are good against? The Mariners.
Mm.
Are the Mariners, like, you know how every season we're like, well, maybe the Mariners, maybe this will be the year for the Mariners. Yeah, there's some hope there. Maybe they'll break that postseason drought. They're terrible again. They're absolutely terrible. We actually, we were chasing a guest.
Softy.
Dave Softy Mahler, just talk about the Mariners. We just thought we'd have like 10 or 15 minutes to discuss this team that once again is coming up short. The Mariners have the longest postseason drought in North American major league sports. And there's no way they're making the playoffs this season, not the way things are going. When are they ever going to turn around? It is incredible, that franchise.
They're 9 games under 500 right now.
The only
team they're ahead of in the division is Oakland.
When were the Mariners founded? What year were they founded? Just Google it really quickly.
They were the Jays' partners. There's 77, wasn't it?
Okay. They have had, so how many years have they been around? Like 45 or something like that?
Yep.
Something like
1977
that.
1977 was their first season, so they're in their 45th year of existence.
They have had basically 7 years of relevance because they were horrible to start for a long, long time. They didn't make the playoffs, and then they had the Soto mojo, and that lasted for, I don't know what, 7 years? Like the end of the Kingdom era got good, the beginning of the new ballpark got good, and everything else has been bad.
There is a wonderful, wonderful free documentary on YouTube put out by Dorktown. I don't know if you guys have heard of them.
Dorktown.
Yeah. They do a lot of good stuff. It's a funny name, but they do a lot of great breakdowns.
Mm-hmm.
There's one on the Mariners and just how the odds are stacked against them to have an existence like this. Like it's to have a team with the futility that the Mariners mm-hmm. have had. It's hard to do, and they break it down in this doc. I'm sure a lot of Mariners fans have already seen it.
Is it like statistically how unlikely it is?
Yes, and it's bizarre just how and they go over the nuance and why all these things happen and why the seasons struggle the way they did. But it's bizarre the fact that the Mariners still are struggling to get back into the playoffs. I can't believe it.
It's crazy to look at their history. Give us a moo cow that started with Ohtani having 8 RBIs in a loss and somehow went to. A rant about how the Mariners are terrible.
By the way, on the subject, everyone that is listening right now needs to watch the Dorktown on Dave Steeb.
That too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You will love it. It is.
Even if you're not
remarkable.
A Jays fan.
Okay, you're
going
to have to give me more than that.
So they refer to him as Captain Ahab because.
Is this about him chasing no hitters?
This was also about him not stepping on a pitching mound until he was 20 years old.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And then becoming
because he was scared of heights.
No, that wasn't it.
No. Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought it was him overcoming something. No?
But then the obviously falling short of the no hitters in the fashion that he did, and becoming one of the best pitchers in the American League in such – it was unbelievable when it happened because there were no aspirations and no thoughts that his ceiling would be that great. And now he's this odd footnote in history for having this crazy thing happen with getting so close to so many no-hitters in such a short period of time, yet never doing it, and then just sort of fading away. Like, Dave Steeb is a footnote because he's not considered one of the great pitchers of his generation. Had he have recorded multiple no-nos, he would have been in that conversation. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's a great document.
Yeah, go watch that for sure. Jason, it's your turn. You go.
I don't have one. I don't have a what we learned. No. Okay, I could do one really quickly. According to Pierre LeBrun, Andrew Brunette is not expected to stick around the Florida Panthers organization. Laddie, was it you that was in my ear saying that someone had reported that the Panthers had offered him a position within the organization? And this, if you're just joining us, Paul Maurice is the new head coach of the Florida Panthers, according to a report by Elliot Friedman, which has since been confirmed by multiple other insiders. Andrew Brunette was a finalist for Coach of the Year, but the playoffs did not go well for him, and it did not go well for the Panthers. And I think the Panthers probably said, listen, like, we're in our Stanley Cup window right now. We cannot afford to have an inexperienced head coach. Even if he did do a good job during the regular season, he did not do a good job during the playoffs. So they bring in Paul Maurice, and he's a guy worth debating as well, right? Like, is Paul Maurice even a good head coach? He's never won a Stanley Cup. I always thought his teams in Winnipeg played with a real lack of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Like a real – they took way too many penalties. Now, some of that was the personnel. Like, Bufflin just kind of played like that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, they were a big, tough team, right? And when they were on, they were intimidating, and sometimes those types of teams take a lot of penalties, and you kind of go, well, that's just what you get with those types of teams.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very curious to see how Paul Maurice – does down in Florida. I'm also curious to see where Andrew Brunette lands. Could he get a head coaching job next season? Because there are still teams that haven't made that decision. Winnipeg is apparently waiting on Barry Trotz too. I don't know what Barry Trotz is doing.
Just thinking besides, about it.
Just having a good think. Chicago, Detroit. I think I'm missing one more that doesn't have a head coach yet.
Boston.
Will Andrew Brunette be considered for any of those jobs? So that's my what we learned. Give me a moo cow there.
I was hesitant to go back to this, but I got to, because I've never been more interested in golf in my entire life because of what's going on between the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour right now. So we talked at length yesterday about the big news, which was Brooks Koepka's defection from the PGA Tour to LIV Golf. I'm not going to get into why he did it or the moralistic obligations of sticking with one another. I don't care. All I know is that the PGA Tour right now is in full-blown panic crisis mode.
Reaction mode.
And they are scared. So Jay Monahan, PGA commissioner, is going to meet with the media today to address what's going on in the Gulf Wars and also reportedly roll out a series of new, quote-unquote, more lucrative events, which are designed for players on the PGA Tour to, and I'm doing a lot of quote-unquote here, secure their own bags without having to leave for the LIV Tour.
Did Jay Monahan actually say that? He said, quote-unquote, secure their own bags.
He's like, sup, kids? What's going on right now is cringe. No cap. We're going to get our guys to secure the bag. Dead ass.
Mm-hmm.
That was Jay Monahan talking, not me.
Right.
I think that this is... It's funny because I read a couple articles and watched a couple stand-ups and guys doing the analysis on this, and they said reactionary is the right term to use because there's nothing really innovative about the way the PGA Tour is going about this. It's almost like Jay Monahan sitting around. He's like, why is everybody leaving? And someone says, Jay, it's because they're getting more money elsewhere. And then Jay Monahan comes back and says, how can we get guys to stay? And then the room goes quiet, and then someone says, how about we also give the players more money? And then the conversation just kind of ended there.
Well, they're being forced to make adjustments. I mean, that's reality, right? They've seen, what, 8 of the top 50 world players leave the PGA Tour for this LIV Golf Series?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's okay to point out that one of the things that Mickelson said was, he yada yada yada'd all the Saudi Arabia stuff, and he said part of the reason I'm doing this is to put more pressure on the PGA Tour as part of a negotiating tactic. Now, the way he yada, yada, yadded was completely obnoxious and bizarre, and it's what got him in trouble, and rightly so. But in a way, like, he had a point, but right? The PGA Tour is now being forced to cater more to the players because of the threat that the LIV Golf Tour, maybe it's not like a survival threat. It's no one's going to think like, oh, the LIV Golf Tour is going to overtake the PGA Tour, but
eight of the top 50 players in the world have gone to LIV Golf.
Nobody thinks that it's going to overtake the PGA Tour, but they're worried about the quality of the competition, the quality of the product. Think of it in NHL terms. Right? Like, let's say there was a new rival league that started, I don't know, somewhere else in the world, Russia or something. Mm-hmm. Or we'll just use like the unnamed nation, like in Top Gun Maverick. Some unnamed nation.
Who's to say what it is?
Starts a rival league and they pluck 8 of the top 50 players in the NHL. Now, is that league going to suddenly overtake the NHL in terms of the best product? No, it's not. It doesn't have. Well, first of all, it doesn't have the other 42 players, best players in the world. It doesn't have the tradition of the NHL. It doesn't have the infrastructure and everything that a long-standing business and league has. But the NHL product is not as good.
Yeah. My point on this was I'm always fascinated to see what leaders do in moments of crisis. And it's very fascinating to see. That's when your leadership really gets tested. It's not in the good times. It's in the tough times. Is what kind of leader, and in this case, what kind of commissioner are you? The PGA's first stance on this was, you can't mess with us. We're the PGA Tour. There will be ramifications. There will be consequences. Guess what? Nobody blinked. Nobody cared. Nobody was worried about it. None of them. As a matter of fact, after Monahan threw down the gauntlet and name-checked 9/11 on national television, more top 50 players went. Hell, more top 30 players went. Abraham Anser went. Brooks Koepka went. And I was like, ooh, that's a calculated step, and it's a misstep. Because it didn't work. It didn't sway anyone. I think that Monahan and the PGA Tour and CBS thought that the prestige and the honor and the history and the clout of the PGA Tour was going to sway enough guys to stick around and not jump ship. They saw the first exodus and they thought, okay, our very first line of defense is going to be don't mess with us. Don't mess with the Shield. Don't mess with the brand. Now, what's been their response? Okay, we got a real competitor here. Mm-hmm. We have a real player. So now we're going to change our layout, our fundamental tour, the way that we do our business to make sure more guys don't leave.
You have to cater to the best players now.
Once these guys went, and now you see like LIV Tours applying for world golf rankings points, they're doing all these things. And the biggest X factor for me was once it became clear that these guys weren't going to be excluded from the majors, it was game over for the PGA Tour in terms of consequences. Because what were they? What was left? Unless you were going to hold guys out of the Open, the U.S. Open, and the Masters, mm-hmm. the most prestigious event,
which I think would have been wrong.
It would have.
Yeah.
But that's where I think the PGA was really flawed, is they thought that more guys were going to be like Rory and talk about the honor and the prestige and the level of competition. And they quickly realized.
I overestimated you guys. I thought some of you would have some morals, but it turns out you just like money.
And that's the thing. And so I think this is so fascinating to me because it goes way beyond golf, right? Yeah. It's like a disruptor, really. You know, they talk about these tech mm-hmm. guys, right? That's what the LIV Tour is. It's a disruptor at this point.
It must have been fascinating when the World Hockey Association started up and they were poaching players out of the NHL, like Bobby Hull. I mean, it really must have been. I mean, even when the CFL would compete for really good NFL players, and it happened like in my lifetime, you know, Rocket Ismail. I remember how big a story that was.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen again.
No. I mean, the USFL was the closest thing that ever tried to challenge the mm-hmm. NFL in recent times, and it'll never happen again. I mean, that's the other thing that I'm so fascinated by is that I don't foresee another league or entity of the PGA Tour's level that will ever be challenged in this way before. Like, there's not going to be an upstart baseball league.
Yeah.
There's not going to be an upstart hockey league. All due respect to the three-on-three league, who won't get back to us, by the way. If you want to talk about how sad it is to be big time by something, an upstart three-on-three hockey league.
Yeah, we can't get a guy on. Can't get anyone to talk up the league.
What's going on?
You mentioned the WHA, though. I had a bunch of old hockey news from back in the day and before, way before I was born. When the WHA stuff was happening, it was a huge story. There was front page coverage.
Of course it was a huge story.
It was what's basically the same narratives we're seeing.
Because no one knew how it was going to play out. Yeah. No one knew the end game, right? Is it going to be just a lifetime of two leagues competing against each other? And what was the end game for the WHA guys? Was it ultimately to join the NHL?
A lot
of businesses start out and their whole idea, and you know, I'm sure there's some entrepreneurs that listen, right? And that have started businesses and kind of their dream is to be like, oh, I'll get to the point where I can sell my business to a bigger business. And that's my exit.
I'll tell you, there's one sport where I could kind of see this happening, and just because it's got the similarities to golf, and I've heard that the rumblings with the players' union versus the federation is tennis, is I would not be surprised if someone makes a go of it based on the LIV Tour model.
Yeah, you've got the independent contractors.
Now, remember, the LIV Tour model also is inherent on having endless amounts of money to spend. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got, honestly, a well of money that will never run dry, and you can just keep throwing it and throwing it and throwing it at people. But that's it. Outside of that, we're talking about a fundamental shift in how the entire sport is conducted and played. And someone laughed. They're like, all it took for Halford to get into golf is the biggest story in golf history. Yeah, but I think it's great. I've watched the documentaries with the USFL and other upstart leagues and seen how it really challenges the core thing that you understand.
We got to get someone on the show that can talk about this Netflix documentary that's going to be coming out soon.
Which one?
On the PGA Tour. Like the PGA Tour.
I didn't know this.
Yes, you did. We talked about it on the. You weren't listening again.
I forgot.
So the PGA Tour has like a Drive to Survive documentary being filmed right now, I believe.
Huh.
Can you imagine some of the stuff that they've got on that?
Great.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing. I don't know when it's. I don't know when it's going to come out. We're trying to chase someone from that documentary to talk about it, but I think it could be absolutely fascinating. One final segment to go on the Halford and Brough Show. Get your What We Learns in. We'll read them on the other side of the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour three of the program. We are right in the midst of it. It's brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. For those of you wondering about the podcast, it is in the process of being uploaded now. We had some delays this morning. But rest assured, the crack staff at Sportsnet 650 is on it. Laddie, can we get an update? What's going on? What do we have available for downloading goodness?
Both first and second hour are online.
See, you guys have missed nothing. And hour three will be up shortly. Wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Google, or Spotify, Starbucks, Petco. Does Petco still exist? I don't even know. Download the Halford and Brough podcast. A reminder, the best of Halford and Brough is also coming up later today. Okay, fire up the dot matrix. Let's print out some humanoid submissions. A loud one today for What We Learned.
Marcus and Gibson's What We Learned. I learned Paul Maurice wasn't done with coaching. He was just done coaching in Winnipeg. I also learned that Nate Schmidt is a coach killer.
Okay, great point on Nate Schmidt. Wherever he goes, bad times follow. I will say this. We've had the better part of an hour to kind of work through the Paul Maurice news. And again, if you missed it, breaking news right in the middle of our show. Andrew Burnett out as the head coach of the Florida Panthers. Paul Maurice in. Not long after, he just kind of walked away from the Winnipeg Jets. My theory here right now, and it's a working theory, so it's still in progress. That wasn't about Paul Maurice getting burnt out. That was more about the Winnipeg Jets room, where he's like, I can't reach these guys because that room sucks.
Yeah, it's so dysfunctional.
And he just left. Because what happened in the aftermath, by that I mean the end-of-year media availability, where everyone was pointing fingers at everyone else, and Mark Scheifele was like, I think I might want to get out of here. And then Paul Stastny was like, well, that's good because you're the problem. I'm paraphrasing.
It's so cold here. It's so cold. Everyone, it's so cold and dark here.
Everyone was like, there's so many mosquitoes. I think at a certain point, that became less about Paul Maurice getting burnt out and more about Paul Maurice looking at this room and saying, I'm not going to be able to
cabin fever city.
Yeah. So I'm looking at it and saying, okay, it makes a little bit more sense that why he's getting back into the game so quickly than many people thought he'd be on the outs for a while. I've got a what we learned here. I wanted to do this as my what we learned, but then I saw that Richard the Hay guy put this one forth. Hashtag WWO, what we learned. Sadio Mane has officially joined Bayern Munich. It's blown. Now, my timeline, my Twitter timeline is very soccer heavy. So
no
it's,
kidding.
But from the international footballing world, this is a massive, massive transfer. There are a few players. Really, the only other one is Mo Salah, as synonymous with Liverpool over the last 6 years. And Liverpool, of course, has reached great heights with Sadio Mane in the fold. The Senegalese forward, of course, they won the league. They won an FA Cup. They won a Champions League. And, of course, the Carabao Cup, the most important of all four of them. But it's funny because him and Mo Salah, for the longest time, were the sort of architects of this team. Also, probably the two best African footballers currently at the moment, right? They clashed against one another at the African Cup of Nations, you know, Mane playing with Senegal, Mo Salah playing with Egypt. If I'm not mistaken, Salah got African Footballer of the Year this year. So it's interesting that their connection and all the great heights that they've led Liverpool to, it now is a split. Mm-hmm. And Salah's the guy that sticks at Liverpool. Sadio Mane moves to another gigantic club at Bayern. Now, if you want to sort of do the domino effect and connect the dots, it's Lewandowski out at Bayern, Sadio Mane in. Darwin Nunez, the Uruguayan, comes in to be the new guy up front for Liverpool to play with the to play with Mo Salah and with Firmino and everybody else. But Sadio Mane was a very, very popular figure. There's a lot of tributes being paid to him, even though he kind of forced his way out. So to all the Liverpool supporters out there, I know this is a big day for your club. So farewell, Sadio Mane, no longer at Liverpool.
Matt from Surrey, what we learned, the Boston Red Sox yellow jersey uniforms may be the worst uniform in jersey history.
They're not great.
They look like if the Milwaukee Brewers moved to Boston.
And
had to change their colors and just put Boston.
I apologize for not knowing this in the moment. There has to be some sort of historical significance. Like maybe these are the ones they wore back in 1911.
The team is wearing special yellow and blue uniforms as part of Nike's City Connect series.
Okay.
The jerseys capture the color scheme of the Boston Marathon.
Okay, there you go.
Which is held annually on Patriots Day in the city. I did not know the uniform or the marathon had colors.
No.
But apparently it does.
So this is the same thing that the Colorado Rockies did. I almost called them the Colorado Walkies, but it's the Colorado Rockies with their green uniforms, which are after the Colorado state license plates.
Is Colorado the toughest name to say of the major leagues?
Colorado. I don't do very well.
I know a lot of them are tough for you, but like top 10,
Colorado Avalanche is always hard. I don't know why, but I just did it there rather smoothly, might add. On the subject of uniforms, Greg and I were having a hearty discussion about this at the break because the Jays played the White Sox last night. The White Sox busted out the South Side uniforms. Now,
Adam, the former Bath guy, actually has a what we learned on this. I learned that the black Chicago White Sox uniforms make them look like a group of brothers who all got matching pajamas from their parents for Christmas.
So
black pajamas for Christmas.
Baseball uniforms are pajamas. That's basically what they are. So.
Yes.
I don't think we talk about how hilarious it is that managers wear the uniform.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Can you imagine a hockey
That's
coach
never changed.
Just I know. In sweater.
It's never changed, though.
It's amazing.
Because remember the NHL briefly went casual in the bubble. Remember that? Like, Torts didn't. It was a big deal when Torts wore a sweater on the bench. It's like, like Robbie Fedoruk. Anyway, the NBA has fully transformed. Right? They no longer wear suits anymore. No, I can't think of the last coach to wear a suit on the sidelines, and that used to be par for the course. The NFL is, they look like slobs right? That was the Belichick influence.
They totally look like slobs.
They all look like slobs, right? They do. And there's no decorum whatsoever.
It's just I've been working so hard, you know?
That is part of it. It's like I don't have time to change these stains on the sweats that are clearly there for 4 or 5 days. I'll be curious to see if the NHL ever adopts a more casual policy. Like, I don't really understand why the coach wears a suit. It just kind of seems like it's one of those things that's done ritualistically.
It's not just the NHL. All hockey leagues have coach standards for what they wear. It's a thing in hockey. It's just
I guess it's a hockey thing through and throughout. I do appreciate the manager wearing the uniform. I don't know why. It's hilarious. It makes zero sense. It does.
You're called in.
Hmm?
Could get pinch hit opportunity.
It doesn't make any sense when you think about it, but I could not imagine what else a guy would wear aside from that. Anyway, the Southside uniforms, the jerseys are awesome. Black with the white pinstripes. I really like them, but the black pants, it looks weird.
Do you remember when the White Sox, this was back in our day, totally changed their uniforms and suddenly their stuff was cool to wear?
Yeah, it was like Raiders and Kings.
It was like Raiders. Yeah, they all went to like the
silver, black,
the gangster
and white
rap.
Silver, black, and white. That's all
they
you
did.
Needed. Yeah,
they did.
That's
but all they you did.
Needed. I just want to say, imagine
the Lions tried that.
Imagine a baseball coach wearing a full suit.
See, that's the thing is,
that's
weird. I can't.
Satin gum.
That's weird.
God, this place is so dirty. There's sunflower seeds everywhere.
You've got the cuffs on your dress pants all filled up with like chew juice.
This doesn't work.
What else would a Major League Baseball manager wear now? Like, I couldn't.
A hoodie.
It would have to go the NFL style where you just look like a slob.
But
in
what
a track
pants?
Suit.
What pants?
That's a good question.
You'd have to have like a team issued tracksuit.
Could you wear shorts?
But then you'd look like a soccer guy or a New Jersey mobster.
And the baseball managers aren't stylish enough to pull off the soccer manager look.
You know, managers are another one, too. It used to be suits a lot on
now
the sideline.
Now it's very European cut jeans.
Well, it's like Vanni Sartini. Like he wears it's just jeans and a t-shirt.
Right.
Right? You're like, are you the manager or are you just one of the dudes that hangs out around the team? Like I can't really tell. Pep Guardiola's always got like the zip up V-neck. It's just very casual now.
Kevin, with what we learned, the LIV versus PGA fiasco is indicative of a larger, fairly new push by employees in almost every industry to be seen and treated as the real asset. It's fascinating to watch. This is the most entertained by golf I have ever been.
Me too.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm always curious to see if the workers of the world start getting some more leverage in their negotiations.
I was just fascinated.
I think we all wondered if there's going to be more leverage coming out of the pandemic, especially with the economy's in such a weird position right now because everyone's worried about the economy. And yet, if you want a job, you can get one pretty easily, right? It's weird.
I got some news for you. We are at the morning skate in Tampa Bay. What do you got?
Just wondering if I should push the breaking news.
No, it's not that breaking. But what we learned, Nazem Kadri is out. He's in a power play jersey. And the expectation.
You mean he's out on the ice, not out.
Sorry. Nazem Kadri is out, on the ice, participating in the skate, wearing a power play jersey. Mike Chambers from the Denver Post suggesting he'll play tonight. So that's a
tonight?
Bait. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I had heard rumblings that they would wait until Game 5 back in Colorado, but if you're concerned about the momentum shifting in this series and you don't want to go the route of we're going to make a goalie change, this is a good way to get some juice back in the lineup. Yes, I said the word juice. So that'll be interesting to see. But Nazem Kadri out there on the ice for the morning skate for the Avs in a power play jersey.
Marty the Red with kind of a hot take, what we learned.
Okay.
I'm going to read it like on a hot take voice. What we learned. Paul Maurice quit on his team. Now that's something to bring into a new locker room. The fact he got a new job so quickly and replaced a coach that did not quit on his team is so NHL.
I do wonder if that, looking back, because remember, I'll word this carefully. At the time, when Paul Maurice said what he said and the way that he left abruptly, I think a lot of people read the situation as burnout, potential mental health issue, which is a totally understandable thing given the profession and how difficult it can be and how stressful and trying it can be. And I think we all de facto went to compassion mode where it's like, hey, if someone's burnt out, if they feel like they're not reaching someone, if they feel like they've got something going on personally, we need to give them the space and time. And we just sort of left the story alone. I mean, remember when we talked about it on the air? I remember the conversation distinctly. It caught us off guard.
I remember thinking it was kind of a noble move. If you don't think that you have enough to give to a group, and that what you have to give is not going to help the group, then leave the group.
And I think I shared the very similar sentiment when we talked about it. I think Bruff's spot on here. Here's the thing. Time happened. And over time, you start to learn more about a situation. You're not reacting in real time. So
maybe he found some energy.
But the end of your media availability in Winnipeg, I think, spoke volumes about what was going on in Winnipeg. Him resurfacing so shortly thereafter, that's a big thing.
You gotta take into account everything that happened to the Winnipeg Jets over the years. And let's start, for just a starting point, with them losing to Vegas a few years ago. And everyone was like, don't worry about it. No big deal. Yeah, you probably shouldn't have beaten this expansion team and made it into the cup final. Maybe you would have won a Stanley Cup. Like, it was there for you. But don't worry. We still got this young core, and everything's going to be okay. Well, then that young core started to get chipped away because Byfuglien left and Trouba wanted out and Laine's game went to hell. And, you know, it was weird what happened there. So that, you know, eventually Byfuglien's not on the team anymore. Trouba's not on the team anymore. Laine's not on the team anymore. Blake Wheeler maybe getting a little bit older, right? And then you're looking around and going, well, okay, there's still some good players here. But is the actual team good? Well, it's not. And when you go from a position of being like, wow, we're like an elite team, we could win the Stanley Cup, to suddenly like, God, why? Everyone doesn't know, no one wants to play here. Now our coach has left. Our pets' heads are falling off. Everything's going to hell here.
All the bad things.
It's almost not surprising. It's almost not surprising that you heard what you heard out of the Winnipeg Jets.
Unsigned text here, so it must be from Gary. Hashtag WWO, what we learned. It feels weird that Connor McDavid didn't win an award when he's so clearly the best player in the world and puts up ridiculous numbers every single year. We will take him for granted the way we did with Crosby. I think there's some validity to this spicy hot take here, because
I don't think we're going to take McDavid for granted like we did with Crosby.
I disagree. I think we might.
I think he's a more spectacular player than Sid.
I do, but I think that we might, because I think it's part of our nature now.
Maybe. I mean, a little bit.
I think, one, that we have short attention spans. Two, I think we're always looking for the next thing to take us by storm and really capture our imagination. So
look, Kel McCarr.
Yeah, or now it's Connor Bedard, right? Mm. We're already looking for that. Never mind Shane Wright. We're already looking two drafts ahead.
Who's Shane Wright?
Yeah, exactly. The other thing, and I'll say this, knowing that I'm probably part of the problem here, but after a while, you watch McDavid do McDavid things, and it, unfortunately, it stops becoming like, I've never seen this before. It's almost like he's cursed by his own brilliance, you know? And it happens sometimes. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's hockey purists out there that are shaking their fists saying, how dare you? He's a marvel to watch every time that he's on the ice, and he is. But he does amazing things. You know what I want to see the next step in the Connor McDavid story and evolution? Rings, titles, championships, those moments, right?
It's hard when you don't have the quality of team around you. It just is. We had this discussion when we were just talking about Ohtani on the Angels or Mike Trout. Like, who? Remember we had that discussion, who is the best player who had to spend his career on like the worst teams? And we started talking about Tony Gwynn with the San Diego Padres, or Marcel Dion.
Trout's in that
with the Kings. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you can say that with McDavid, but if you look at the quality of the Oilers' blue line and the quality of their goaltending, it's not Stanley Cup caliber. It just isn't. Darnell Nurse is a good player, but he's overpaid now. I don't think anyone is thinking that Darnell Nurse should win the Norris Trophy. Where did he finish in the Norris Trophy voting? Like, was he even in there?
I will tell you right now.
Because he's paid like a number one defenseman. He's paid like a defenseman that should be in the Norris Trophy conversation. And a lot of it with Edmonton is like, you just don't want guys to leave. Because the fact of the matter is, in places like Edmonton and Winnipeg, even though they are great hockey cities, awesome hockey cities, people love hockey there, not everyone wants to live there.
The final total of votes for Darnell Nurse for the Norris Trophy was Zero.
Really?
Yeah.
Chris Tanev got a fifth place vote from from Drancer.
I felt like that was you. You're the spirit of Jason Brough. So Jason's thing, when we used to be able to vote before it was callously ripped away from us, you used to give, it wasn't just Tanev, it was like you used to give a Canuck.
I gave Tanev a fifth place Lady Bing vote.
Yeah, it's like one of those like little winks, like a little Easter egg.
Like, this guy's a good defenseman. He doesn't take many penalties.
Yeah,
and he's a class act. Like, he is very sportsman.
Because I'll tell you what, as soon as they made the voting public, everyone got real nervous. But no one cares about a fifth place Lady Bing vote.
Mm-hmm.
Just trust me on that. You can throw it in there, and everyone's like, I see what he's doing there.
Halford gave one to Marchand.
Yeah, just why not?
No, he didn't.
I think he cleaned it up. He didn't lick anybody that year.
Do you have a What We Learned, my friend?
I do. Hashtag WWL. What We Learned. Minor Matt Abbotsford. I learned that Mr. R. Kansas, it's better known as the newest producer here at Sportsnet 650, Andy Cole. Remember when he...
Yes.
We were talking about Arkansas basketball.
And he kept doing it.
Yeah,
he kept doing it.
He pronounced it Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious.
I had no expectations of him doing that. And he just kept doing it anyway. Andy, according to Minor Matt,
like when you did Peter Cetera.
Right. I get, but I corrected myself.
Well, I corrected you. Rather aggressively.
Sternly, I might add. Yeah. You know what it is? Now I'm going to go down. You know what it is? It's like when you're Ron Burgundying something and you're reading it and you're not really paying attention to what you're reading and you just do it phonetically. So he did Arkansas. I did Peter Cetera. Like, et cetera. Anyway. To the point, it's according to Minor Matt from Abbotsford, Andy Cole no longer wants to be known as A-Dog anymore.
How did he get? I never heard this.
Well, there's a phone ringing. I bet it's A-Dog. He heard the A-Dog alert.
He's like, "Roro."
Here's the thing. I believe that we're gonna get A-Dog in studio, if not tomorrow, then Friday on the Halford and Brough show. Dom's under the weather, so we're going to get a fill-in. So we will reunite with the A-Dog. We're going to have an all-dog show. You got the dogs in you. We got A-Dog and Laddie. All right. Have you worked with A-Dog before, Laddie?
I have not. I can't wait to add that humor, though, to the show. Arkansas.
He's a real cut-up.
Don't get jealous. Don't get jealous. We still like you. You sound a little jealous
there. I know Andy
there.
From Twitter. That's where I know Andy from.
Are you nervous about your standing as the top dog, as it were?
As the one we like?
I think I will forever be Laddie. Regardless.
That's true. Mm-hmm. You are going to be Laddie.
You're a good Laddie.
The only reason I brought up Minor Matt's What We Learned is so I could say that I think we're going to have A-Dog in here. Maybe tomorrow, hopefully for both days, Thursday and Friday. I'm very much looking forward to it if we can get that done. I think you and A-Dog will be the best of buds. You guys can have a... Lady and the Tramp moment where two dogs eating spaghetti.
You
together.
Can't say that. What if we don't get along?
Well, then you'll fight over the spaghetti and claw each other to death.
I am a blank slate with Andy, so if he comes in here guns blazing, then we might butt heads a little bit.
I don't think that's going to be a problem.
He's not going to come in guns blazing.
No, you don't think so?
I've never used the words guns and blazing to describe Andy really ever. Okay, we got another What We Learned before we go?
We do have what
I got
we
one from
that,
Kevin. Okay, go ahead.
What We Learned unsigned. Coaching in the NHL is a cutthroat business, successful or not. Yeah, it is.
Andrew Rudnick got nominated to be one of the best coaches in the NHL this year, and then he got let go.
And this is why coaches, when they negotiate their contracts, they're like, hey, I don't really want to go in as a lame duck head coach. This is why they try and get term. This is why it's very important to them that they get term, because they know that they're easy to change. Really are. It's easy to change the coach. And look at the bump that the Canucks got from simply changing their coach this year.
This did happen before, by the way. I was trying to remember, has a Jack Adams finalist ever been fired in the subsequent, like before the sorry?
Didn't Bill Barber get let go?
Guy Carboneau as well. So there you go. So it's not completely unprecedented, and it does underscore the point. Coaching is indeed a cutthroat business. We got to get out of here for now, but we will be back tomorrow. Signing off, I have been Mike Helford. He's been Jason Brough. He's been Laddie, top dog, for now. This has been the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.